woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Well, up face Jackson Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. It's Matt Weber on the board. SP futures down a whole 6.25 after being up huge yesterday. Huge. Dow down 62 after being up 500 points yesterday. NASDAQ down 16 after being up like 250 yesterday. Yesterday was a massive bounce-back rally. We'll see if it holds. I'm guessing it probably will, and we'll probably flatten out here for a little while. But that's that and... You can find a payphone, that and about a buck get your phone call, because, I mean, we're all over the place, and any little piece of news out of somewhere is enough to chase us one way or the other. Yesterday, out of all the problems in the world, we've got newspaper people being dismembered. We've got all kinds of things happening. Our president said his biggest enemy now is the Fed.
There you go.
Can you think of anything more ignorant to say?
I'm sure he'll think of something.
Sure he'll think of something. Do we have Kevin?
Not yet, just a minute.
Okay, we'll listen in a minute. Anyway, yesterday was big-time rally. Virtually every, I didn't see any stocks really down. And after the close on Netflix, had good earnings. IBM, not so good. IBM seems to, every earnings, they seem like they're down $5. And I came real close to putting on a earnings position in IBM, Maddie, down $5, because they've done it a few out of the last, I won't say every time, but they've done it. Like 3 or 4 of the last 5 times they've been down $5 or more. So I'm thinking a day like yesterday when we're up to the gazoo, do I really want to put a spread out in a stock that's down a chunk from where it's trading? And I go, nah, why would I pay a quarter for that? And sure enough, I think it opens down $5 last night. I'm like, oh, well, there's when you let slip by, you idiot. anyway, but it's hard to do that. I mean, it's a, you know what's even odder is that the, when you look at an earnings play, when I say an earnings play, you buy a calendar spread, like maybe next week, sell this week. That normally would be, as much as 80 cents or a buck, you can get them for 25, 30. But it's not like they're all that cheap because the stock is going to move. Or let's put it this way, has a higher propensity to move. That's why your option modeling, you have to be real careful when you look at options. Is the models tell you one thing, but there's weaknesses in the models. The models assume a steady flow of information. Yet we know that there isn't a steady flow of information. On earnings day, the information is worth a hell of a lot more than any other day, except for maybe a Fed day or something like that, or, you know, a war day, or hopefully we don't have any more of those. But, there is no such thing as a steady flow of information. So these option prices maneuver back and forth. And I thought I could get that for a quarter, and I really felt that I would have paid 20 cents for it, and a quarter was a little too much. And then it actually went up to 30 cents. And then the weird part, Maddie and Kevin, is that every strike, stock was trading like 155, every strike down to like 47 and up to maybe 62 were all trading the same price. Now you would think that every time you moved away from where it was, that it would come down a little bit, but it really didn't. So everybody was convinced that IBM was probably going to make a $6 move, and it did, like 550. So the theys were right. If you would have picked a direction, you'd have been okay. If you'd have picked $5 up, now you're $10 out of the money, and even though you only paid 30 cents instead of 80, your 30 just went poof. Because, I mean, in a nanosecond. So, you pay less, but then again, the bet is a little more harsh, so we say. Kevin, how are you?
Good morning. I'm doing fine.
Yes, well, that's good. We've got mortgage applications going in the dumper. They went down 7.1% last week. Interest rates up to an 8-year high. I still have, you know, somewhat, I'll say, tremendous concern of people just not quite getting where this is all going to head us if it keeps going in the right way. I mean, if the Fed keeps doing what it's doing, because I don't think people after 8 years actually think that what was happening was somewhat artificial. And it's just, you know, they had Carl Icahn was on the other day, and I'm not a massive fan of the man. And he said, what do you think about the interest rates? He goes, we've been artificial for a while. And he goes, and you have to assume the fact that part of the market being up where it is to do with the Fed keeping our rates artificially low. So when you go back to, quote, normalize, guess what? You're going to end up with, you know, some movement the other way. How much? You know, you're not going to go back to 2008 levels because I look at where the earnings are way higher and those kinds of things. So that's not going to happen. But the point being is that there's going to be some, at least, intention of going the other way. Now, you know, it doesn't mean we're going to go down 30 or 40%, but you know, if depending on how artificial the number is, to think of you know, 10% or something is certainly not. Is that, I mean, if it goes down 10% from where it is now, I'd say that's a pretty successful plan, wouldn't you? I mean, it's not going to be zero. I mean, just saying. But how, you know, how much is, but people are like, it's already in the market. How could it possibly be in the market? If the rates are 2%, how could a rate of 6% be in the market? I mean, it's so ignorant, it's scary. Just saying. So there. But we want to talk about, what's going on in, Matt sent me this thing from you yesterday that I'm, of course, trying to find here feverishly. There it is. This article regarding what's going on in Kansas. And I have an overriding question, Kevin. I know you're very bright and well-read. You're not the attorney. My first question is, what is the Fed doing in any of this?
Well, there are some criminal activities, or at least some allegations of criminal activities in here. So you have to separate what's an NCAA violation and what is a violation of the law.
Right, my question is, the Fed separating it, or do they just go wherever they feel like they should go?
I'm not sure what you mean by that.
Well, I mean, I'm talking about just, why don't you fill in what we're talking about, because we're way ahead of everybody here. Why don't you fill in?
Okay, so this all started probably a year ago when the FBI held a press conference, and they had been investigating some fraudulent activities related to the NCAA, and specifically college basketball. And in that, they revealed a number of they indicted a number of assistant coaches. They indicted some people that were associated with Adidas, but in the process, they also revealed a lot of other NCAA violations that are not legal violations. In those cases, they did not identify the individuals involved or the schools involved by name, but, for example, they kind of gleefully identified University 6, a public research institution in Kentucky with enrollment of whatever exactly,
hey, Kevin,
it says on the Louisville website.
I'm going to show myself.
So you knew who it was.
All right, I'm going to show my Southside roots. Who's, how's this for a word? Who sicked the FBI on who?
They had an agent or, you know, an operative for an agent, and they had him on tax fraud, and he said, hey, I can tell you a whole lot more.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Okay.
The investigation opened.
So they had an agent, and that's how kind of this would start, I would guess, there was some massive gift or some payment that somebody didn't pay taxes on.
Right, and so it started into I have offered. Now, what was among the charges, and it's not what the current trial is at the moment, but among the charges were several assistant coaches were accepting bribes for steering players to agents, and if you work for a public university, you are not allowed to do that.
Right now, is that a FBI issue or is that a state issue?
Well, it's an FBI issue because they're getting federal money.
Okay, which is a stretch.
It might be. But as we said last time I was on, you do business with the feds, you get both edges of the sword.
Well, I don't
take that money, fine. Then there's a whole bunch of compliance that goes with it, and
but
you know it is all encoded in the law.
But who doesn't take? If you take that to the extreme, and let's talk about them one at a time. If you take that to the extreme, everything the city of Chicago does should be a federal offense because they get fed money for highways and everything else. I mean, if you take that, I mean, there wouldn't be any state law because everybody gets federal money at some point. You and I do, I forgot, probably. I mean, okay. Well, so
if your point is that, you know, we should throw half of the city council and a lot of the mayor's staff into prison for violations of federal law, you want me to stand up and salute or just stay sitting?
I guess what I'm saying, if that's all it takes for the Fed to essentially start control what are normally state laws. I mean, I guess, you know what I'm saying? Everybody over the age of 65 is getting federal money. Yet the Fed doesn't seem
okay,
to.
Okay, and who is going to go after you if you defraud the Medicaid system?
I'm going to guess that would be a state thing.
No, it would be the feds. Absolutely, it would be the feds.
Right, well, I guess I'm just not a...
For Medicare fraud? Yeah, absolutely.
Sure it would be the Medicare, but I'm ahead of you sort of in the article here. I'm asking you to start from the beginning, and of course me being the knucklehead I am, I'm already at the end. I guess I don't understand how if Adidas gives Maddie Weber's future son, Maddie Weber a new F-150 to steer the son to an Adidas school, I don't see how that's a federal. I don't. First of all, I'm not even sure it's a crime, and secondly, why is it a federal crime? No, if they don't.
I think it's a reach that it's a crime, because, but they're prosecuting it accordingly. What they are saying is that the Adidas, which had a contract with several of these schools, defrauded them by making their players ineligible without their knowledge. Now, I think that's a reach. The defense for that accusation is, oh, they knew.
Okay.
And so that, you know, to me, that's kind of the interesting part of this, is that you have someone accused of defrauding the schools as part of a business relationship that they have, and them turning around and saying, well, you know, basically you can't cheat an honest man. That, you know, they knew darn well. I wasn't defrauding them out of anything. They were willing participants in the scam.
All right, so let me, I like to start from things. I mean, when I have somewhat different ways to approach problems, I want to know exactly where, let's say for instance, it's 25 years from now, I retire, I got more money than God, and I'm a big knucklehead, and I get Howard Hughes' old place in the Desert Inn, even though the Desert Inn is now down. And I sit up there and I watch TV like Howard Hughes did, and Maddie Weber is my bag man. And, like Howard Hughes had his guy. And, so I see Loyola winning. I love the coach. I love Sister Jean. And I find out through my numerous sources that, Thomas's kid is a spectacular basketball player, and he's choosing between Loyola and somebody else. I don't know Loyola from Boo. I don't even have a Loyola hat. And I all of a sudden go out and I pay my gift tax and I send Thomas's mother a brand new F-150 and I said, or Thomas's wife, and I go, look, assuming you can find one. There's a shot. It would be great if your kid went to Loyola. All right, so what? I just did it. I paid my tax, and now all of a sudden I don't even like. So there's another kid who's really, really smart, and he wants to go to Michigan because I like my friend Gene out there. He wants to go to Michigan Engineering School, and they're not giving enough money, and I send him a check for $20,000, and I said, Michigan's the place. Why am I going to jail for this exactly?
Well, first of all, because we don't like you.
Okay, that's good. We'll start with that. Okay, I understand.
Which often is good enough.
Yeah.
But why are you going to jail for that? You may not be.
Well, then what what's
because
the?
Because you're not affecting any. In the case of the basketball, you might be because you're affecting the player's eligibility. You're making the player ineligible.
Right.
But are you getting something out of it? That becomes the real question.
Why am I making him ineligible by giving?
Part of a fraud case is that you have to be getting something from it. And so what are you getting is the question. And in the case of Adidas, what they're getting is some promotional benefit because they have a big interest in having their sponsored schools perform well, be featured on television, et cetera, et cetera. They're interested in seeing that little three-bar pyramid thingy that they have for their logo standing at the free throw line on a regular basis.
I guess I'm just starting from the base. If I give somebody money to influence where they go to school, and I have nothing to do with the school, although the Irish will say that because I was an alumni, somehow or another I have something to do, but I've never given those guys a dime and never will.
By definition, though, an interested party. If you're an alumnus,
well, but by
you
whose
are.
Okay. I guess I'm saying by whose definition?
An interested party.
All right. So I went to a school other than Notre Dame. I do Loyola. I've never even seen the place. I mean, I guess what I'm concerned, if your grandson can't find a place where he wants to go to, he's a spectacular football player and he's deciding between Tennessee and Alabama and all of a sudden, I like watching Alabama on TV and I come and give Amy a new pickup truck and say, tell your nephew to go to, because he doesn't care which one he goes, tell him to go to Alabama because you got a new pickup truck. And he goes, I don't see how that's a crime as long as I paid a gift tax. I mean, and to do everything correctly.
I see what you're saying. So it gets to be: are you a I'm not seeing the fraud case so well either, but they're proceeding with it. But the case is that they are interfering with the player's eligibility, and that the coaches think, and the coaches in the school think that they're getting eligible players, and because of what Adidas did, because Adidas is part of the apparel company for the school, Adidas actually is a representative of the university, and as part of that business relationship. They're claiming that they're defrauding the school. I think it's a big reach. I think the interesting part of it is that the defense is by Adidas is they knew they were breaking NCAA rules.
Okay.
And that's getting documented in court, and that's always the problem that the NCAA has when it comes to their breaking their rules. Their problem is always proving it because they don't have subpoena power. And that's what makes this case interesting is that all of this stuff is getting completely and thoroughly documented with text messages and everything else that the FBI is able to get its hands on.
Do you think I'll be blunt here. Do you think these idiots at some point will not use text messages and actually just call somebody and talk to them on this stuff? Are they that stupid?
I'm going to have to dig out that how not to get caught article that I've posted before, and yes, it has things like always use a burner phone,
my skepticism, for lack of a better term, Kevin. I mean, you and I have been. I mean, I should probably mention that to the listeners. I mean, you and I have been, talking about this kind of stuff since we were in school together, for God's sake. So it's been a long time. It always seems to me that the schools that are trying to break into the upper class of schools are the ones that appear to get caught. I mean, for years it was the NCAA, and I don't know, Matt, even all your trips to Vegas, have you ever been out to UNLV?
To the campus?
Yeah.
No, I mean, I've seen it. I've been to the arena.
Well, when I first went out there to campus, I'm going to say I don't think there was a dorm. And the only thing they had going for them, or no other campus in the world, is they had you could get a master's in hotel management. Just like at the University of Chicago when I went there, it was the only place you get a master's in hospital management. But now I'm sure millions of places have it. But the campus looked like It wasn't as big as just the quadrangle in DePaul. I'm going to say there were six buildings. They had a nice track and field, and because I used to go over there and use the track, and they had a big workout facility on the track. It was kind of neat back when I used to go and run and things during the day. But I'm going to say you would never have guessed that they had a major basketball team, and it was a little community campus. And of course, it's gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. Now they got that huge arena and stuff. But at the time, Tarkanian was the coach, and he was trying to break into the UCLA, you know, the Kansases of the world, because they're pretty big. And he was trying to break in, and they were after him. Kevin, was it every year they were on him for some violation or something? And finally, his wife, they interviewed his wife, and she was a ball buster and a nice lady, but she'd just say she didn't hold back. She goes, I don't understand something. How come, this is back when shall we say, a lot of the African-American players liked to wear fur coats. You know, remember we went through that routine. When was that, Kevin? Even though it was, like, warm in California. She goes, I don't get it. Our guys are wearing letter jackets. The guys from the UCLA are living on the beach, and they were in fur coats, and we're the ones in trouble. What's wrong with this picture? She like, didn't she say that on national TV, Kevin, or something one night?
She might have, but, UCLA at the same time was dirty as could be, and, you know, it was funny because Tarkanian always used to complain that, you know, that others, that he got in trouble for things that everybody else was doing. That doesn't mean he wasn't doing it, by the way. He certainly was, and it's no surprise that he got three different schools on probation. But there absolutely are sacred cows. There are also people who are way better at cheating than others.
You sound like Eric's brother.
A better, more organized network. And, you know, right now, the problem, I think, lies in basketball with that handful of five-star players, the guys that are going to be in the NBA after 1 year, and the NBA has to participate in cleaning this up by giving a different pathway to the league that other than a year in college, because once they do, then and that pathway would include their developmental league, the G League, and they're going to have to figure out how to handle drafting high school age players, because nobody likes to spend a really high round draft pick on such a big question mark. But nobody wants to say I passed on LeBron James because I didn't want to draft a high school guy. So they have to figure out some things. But if they do, then the guys that want to get paid will have a place to go.
Yeah, I agree.
Instead of having to get paid to go to college.
I don't disagree. The one single, I don't know why I get predisposed to pick out certain things, but having spent as much time talking to Professor Eric, who comes on the show every couple of weeks usually, when Eric's thoughts have been, I use the word tainted, because his brother played pro ball. And his brother's absolutely convinced that the good coaches just have a better way to pay people than the other coaches. And a lot of it has to do with boosters giving people money and it's almost like mob money, Kevin. I mean, you don't, if your son gets the 20 grand hit, I'll use the term Alabama, although I'm not accusing them. If he gets the 20 grand from Alabama, he doesn't just decide to go somewhere else. It's like getting a loan from the mob.
Right. Yeah. If you accept the money, don't screw them. These are not people you want to mess with.
And in the line that jumped out of me in this article, if I can find it here, was that Adidas had to give the kid 20 grand because he had to pay back the 10 he got from wherever else he was supposed to go. And if he didn't pay him back, he'd have to keep looking over his shoulder for forever, and so would his family.
Right. And in many cases, the high-profile parts of these cases, we're talking guys in six figures. Now, again, am I appalled at the notion of paying college players? No, but they have the rules as they are. This, you know, sort of shifting gears, and I think I have a minute to say this, that, in kind of a working theory I have of why so few college coaches have been able to make the transition to the NBA, I think in many cases it's because some of the most successful college coaches have just been able to accumulate the best talent, possibly by breaking the rules. And the NBA is a little bit better about, enforcing its rules for tampering and things like that. Plus, they have a salary cap.
Manny, do I have time to read this paragraph?
Max contracts. And, so my point for raising that is, it doesn't surprise me that, oh, like the only college coach in recent memory to be a real success would be Brad Stevens, because I think he was, I think he succeeded at Butler because he was a really good coach, not because he could buy the best talent and put and shove them out on the floor.
Kevin, we got a second guest, Nola, one of the guys you're talking about, a former AAU director from Springfield, Massachusetts, testified last week that he paid $89,000 to former Kansas player Billy Preston's mother. He also agreed to pay $20,000 to DeSouza's guardian, Fenny, whatever his name is, to help him get out from under a pay-for-play scheme to send him to Maryland. I don't remember the words, but Fenny told me he was under this umbrella from the Maryland booster, which is just what we're talking about. You had to pay off the other, here's your money back. You don't just take it and go some other place and expect to be healthy,
yeah,
evidently.
And in some cases, you might not be able to pay it back either.
Right.
You already took it, man. You're going.
Oh, that's obviously very possible. But I think if you give it back, you at least got a fighting chance, shall we say? SP Futures still down 7. Dow Futures down 62. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTIsecurities.com. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howie, Mr. Kevin O'Neill, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Leaking a little bit, but I'm going to say not even a fifth of what we were up yesterday, so not much of a leak. S&P futures down 875, Dow futures down 95. And there's that futures down 27, which seemed like a lot, except yesterday we were up 500 in like 50 in the S&P. So, like I said, it's not much of a leak so far. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX actually down 43, FTSE up 22, CAC down 2. So they followed us yesterday, not as high, because we closed higher the last couple hours, and they were already closed. So they're not following us much at all over there. Asia, however, up a bunch. Nikkei up 291, 1.3. They've been down day after day after day, so they needed some kind of a dead cat bounce. Shanghai up 15.6. It's not even a whole percent. Hang Seng only up 17. That's like flat. So they're not coming back at all here. Still 25,462. That, I guess, is kind of troubling if you're bullish. Oil down 28 cents. Brent down 15 cents. Spread now is $9.74, if I do the math. Natural gas up 320, up a penny to 325. RBOB 198. We've got gold down $1.50. Silver up, say, a penny. So not much going on there. Maybe what do you got for us, Trevi, Weather Sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're actually off to a good start this morning, Chief, after a busy couple of days to begin the week. From a traffic perspective, no issues on the Edens or Kennedy. Traffic building on the Eisenhower and Stevenson, but no accidents to report. Southside Expressway is looking really good. No issues or incidents of heavy traffic on the south side. A couple of crashes out in the burbs, northwestern suburbs, Algonquin Road, which is Route 62 at Sandbloom Road. There is a crash with injuries, significant crash there that has that area closed off. Just to the east of there, Route 45 southbound at Butterfield Road, there is a crash. And in the city on the south side, Ashland is closed southbound between 61st and 63rd. As the right lane is blocked from a major crash involving a car that hit a light pole, causing the wires to fall across the road. No injuries in that one, but the road will remain partially blocked until ComEd can fix the down line. So that'll take all day, if not longer. And then not too far from there, on the south side, we have a crash at 71st and Cottage Grove Avenue. Car versus a CTA bus with passengers. We're assuming the bus won that collision. Crews are on the scene, report no major injuries, but 71st at Cottage Grove is partially closed right now for that investigation.
Sure, he stops Stacks and Jackson, run down and jump on the bus and sue.
Weather today, partly cloudy skies, cooler than yesterday, a high of just 49, but lots of sunshine, so that'll be good. Right now it's clear and 44 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 78 today. Right now it's clear and 57. In sports, Major League Baseball, a couple of games yesterday. The Red Sox are now up 2-1 over Houston. They blew out the Astros with a late grand slam to pull away. 8-2 was the final yesterday. Game 4 later on today. Dodgers outlasted the Brewers in 13 innings. They won 2-1 and tied that series at 2 games apiece. And in hockey, Blackhawks were off, but the Coyotes were in action. They lost to the Wild 2-1.
So, Kevin, as we've talked about this like for a while, we can't seem to figure out, when I say we, it's sort of like and I find the NCAA thing so similar to politics. We can't really figure out what's right and wrong. It doesn't appear. We seem to have problems drawing the lines, and the lines seem to get drawn who's caught, who's whatever. I'll give you a real simple story from one of the contributors of the show who will go nameless. Grew up in Florida, smart guy, and he was tutoring big black kid, football player. Said the nicest kid in the world, wasn't so hot at math, but he helped him out somewhat. And all of a sudden, he made the decision to go to one of them, Florida State, and there was a new pickup in the driveway. You know, and they didn't have any money. And I don't know, Kevin, where were exactly does the family or the kid deserve something for going to spend 4 years at one of those universities and can't even get a summer job because you're required to be there? This is before anybody get paid even the monthly stipend. You know, should the number be zero when obviously you're worth something at a place? You and I just came from a tailgate at Notre Dame, and if you listen to people talk, the players should get nothing. Yet the skyboxes they built for the alumni to watch the game, I've never seen anything as opulent in a casino. And it looked like being one of the casinos was a place in the Mediterranean where James Bond used to play.
Dubai?
Yeah, no. Well, I suppose those are good. I'm talking
those
about the one.
Those are the ones now.
Yeah, but all you're missing is the side rooms where both sexes could go for the massage with the happy ending. I mean, it's opulent to the point of being disgusting. And yet we're going to begrudge the kid's old man a pickup truck that's down there beating his head in the field. I mean, where are we going? I mean, you've been with me the whole way. There needs to be a Solomon to draw the lines here someplace. We just don't seem to have one.
Right, and we've discussed different kinds of models that they can do, and why the NCAA does it the way that they do, and I don't think it's very defensible. The part that really gets me about it, when we talk about rules violations, I understand it from the athlete's point of view, and I understand it just as much from the athlete who is from the north suburbs and gets a scholarship to go play at a Big Ten school, just as much as I understand it from the inner city kid who gets the same scholarship. They are not being compensated for what their economic value to the school is, and it's a one-sided deal for the schools. Tuition, room, and board has a whole lot of value, but it's still not close to what they what they create for the schools.
Well, the fact that it drags the other kids along.
Where I get nutty about this is from the coach's standpoint and the athletic administration standpoint, because they're the ones that make and agree to the rules and then turn around and break them. And those are the ones where I just have no tolerance for that, no patience for that at all, because I understand why the athletes would do it. I don't understand the coaches. That is just flagrant. It's a hypocrisy. It's dishonesty, and it's not the kind of people that I think we want to be part of an educational system.
Well, Kevin, when you have, again, you and I coming at it from, I look at it. I would like to see. I would hope that all the listeners that listen to us understand what I'm talking about. But anybody who has an economics class in sophomore year in high school has to understand, has to. I'll be strident about this. That when you have Adidas, XYZ Corp, Matty Weber shoes, whoever it happens to be, goes out and gives XYZ University $5 million for their basketball program, to wear the Matty Weber, is to have the face on the sleeve, to think that they don't give a rat's behind about the quality of player that's going there and how many times they're going to be on national TV is about as naive as me owning the Golden Gate Bridge. I mean, for you to not think that. And same way with this AAU situation that hopefully Dave Murphy's going to come out and talk about one day, our buddy who's a former coach in California, to think that these guys get in the middle and spend all this time developing these high school players and running these camps, realizing the value that they're adding to these people, and not trying to get something back from the college they're delivering them to. For you to think somebody should do that for free, or they think they should do that for free, is so naive. I want to play poker with you tonight. I mean, it's that bad. I mean, why is it that I understand that and it seems like other people don't, Kevin? I mean, to me, it's not a hard concept.
Well, we sort of cherish some images, some stories about the athletes that just don't happen to be true. But they do make, it kind of makes us feel good. You know, you're playing for your school, you're playing for your teammates, you know, go alma mater.
Well, there's a lot to that, I think.
And in many cases, it is alumni of the school who just love the place. And they think everybody else who's involved with it loves it just as much. And they don't recognize that a lot of what revolves around athletics is not for love of the school. It's because it's business. It's a business transaction.
Well, I mean, as Mike Royko said once, he never could. His problem with Major League Baseball and all the pro leagues were the owners expected all the players to treat it as a sport, where they treated it as a business. If the players started treating it like a business, they were pissed off, essentially.
Yep, and I think now for the most part, sports ownership has come to grips with that. They didn't used to.
No, the colleges still have not, though.
Sports ownership.
Colleges
still have difficult negotiating sessions. They still have their challenges for labor agreements. But they tend to solve them more now because they don't have that attitude anymore that says, "Oh, you're getting nothing, and you're going to have to like it because you're getting paid to play a game."
You know, Kevin would have been terrific as Judge Smales, wouldn't you, Manny? You'll get nothing like it, Spalding. Well, yeah, I don't know. It just does seem like the amount. What do you figure, Kevin? If somebody were to total up the amount of money, I mean, let's just take the top 40 schools and the stadium expansion, the skybox expansion, all the other crap that went with it, you know, the big banquet rooms and everything up there that they claim they needed for if you total that money up for the last 20 years, what do you suppose it is? Name me a school that hasn't spent $100 million on their stadium in the last 10 years, at least. Michigan, 100,000 seats wasn't enough.
They spent in the five digits on the scoreboards alone.
Yeah, I mean, at Notre Dame, if you haven't been down there, they couldn't just say we're spending $150 million for skyboxes. They had to spend $450 million for some combination of they put a classroom in one end and they got a little gym in the other end that other people can use, and they put a thing for the band in one end. I mean, just to make it seem like this was for all students. Come on, Kevin. Are we that naive? Why don't they just say we're putting up the skybox?
Yes, we are.
Yeah, I guess we are. We're putting up. Well, look at how much Texas A&M spend or Penn State on their places. All these places are over 100,000 people now. I mean,
athletic directors will refer to the arms race.
Yeah,
and it really is that. It's a business model. I actually think it's a cynical business model.
Well, why do you think, speaking of which, tie that in with your last statement, why do you think that Oregon, the guy from Nike, spent so much money up there for the, didn't they have the facilities where something like every position on the team have their own, weight room and their own film room and everything else, and weren't there like private rooms to talk to your agents when you were a senior and you were done and things like that, where you could go there and nobody would even know you were meeting with it. And now, all of a sudden, Oregon doesn't seem like we're doing so hot. Is that because everybody else pointed up the same kind of cash for stuff in their places? It's not even a competitive edge anymore?
Partly. I think partly that's true. Partly it's because Chip Kelly left the program right ahead of the posse. He had a show cause order associated with him so that nobody else was allowed to hire him for several years. Of course, so he went to the NFL and failed there. And then he's back at UCLA now because his show cause order had expired. They finally won the first game last week at UCLA under Kelly. I don't know if he just needs time to get the machine running or what, but it was the first time that UCLA had started, I think 0-5 ever. I sort of delight in the guys that I know are really, really shady. I sort of delight in their failures, and so I've been following the Kelly situation at UCLA, and he's been terrible. And I think it's great.
Well, if you were just
am I not a nice person?
Well, I mean, I'd say if you were just a very, I'll say a clean football player, for lack of a better term, your choice of your school. I mean, what would it be made on? Would it be made on who the position coaches for your spot? I got to believe that the Irish have a little more trouble recruiting offensive linemen now that the guy went from there to the Bears. Now, I'm not saying the new guy isn't good too, but
yeah, Harry Eastand.
Didn't Penn State for a long time, or even Pitt when Jimbo Covert went there? Didn't they have a spectacular offensive line coach that every year managed to pop somebody in the NFL, and all the offensive linemen knew that, so they were able to recruit people that maybe would never even have thought of Pitt in the first place. Are those the types of things that, from a football standpoint, will drag you to a place?
Oh, I think it's pretty straightforward what they want from a football standpoint. They want to play in good games, you know, in big venues, good games, bowl games and so on. They want good road trips, all of that. So that's part of the equation. They want to be on good teams, and they want to be developed for the NFL if they have the talent to do it, or the NBA if in the case of basketball. They want coaches who will develop them. So part of that's a facilities issue that they don't necessarily need the lavish lounge, although, you know, the lavish players lounge, although when you see it, then you start to say, well, that's kind of sweet. That becomes a factor, but I think they want the more significant workout facilities, the really decked out weight rooms and cardio rooms and trainer facilities and all of that. Those are all the factors, because those are what develop the athlete for the next level of sport. Now, do some of the athletes realize that they're a long shot to become that guy? Yeah, they do, and so there are also some that look at the educational opportunity that goes with it. But I think that tends to be a much bigger deal in different sports. So, for instance, if you take women's basketball, there's a big advantage for the schools that have reputations, because most women who go to play basketball are not going to make a fortune professionally. The WNBA doesn't pay that much. They can make some more in Europe, but they're not likely to make, you know, the kind of fortune that you can make in the NBA. So now the value of your degree starts to matter a little bit more.
What about it seemed to be an advantage early on for the Irish that everybody was televised. Your mom gets to watch you play. Is that still a big deal?
I think it is. I don't think the exposure is individuals, but I think there's something associated with that says this is big time. Because I don't think you have to really worry about exposure, when it comes to that. If you're good, if you're a real prospect, they know it. You're not, and especially if you're a lineman, nobody's going to sit there and say, "Well, I saw that lineman on TV. Boy, is he good! I'm going to make him a first round draft pick." So, the other thing, and this comes into play for a lot of athletes, is can my family come and see me play? So, some of them may have the opportunity to play anywhere. If you live in Wisconsin, and you can play at any of the Florida schools, any of the Texas, any SEC school, there are some who choose to do that because of the quality of the program, but there are also some who say, nope, I'm staying home, I'm going to Wisconsin, or I'm going to Iowa, or I'm going to or Minnesota, because my family can drive over and see me play every day. That also becomes a factor in basketball. There are people who, travel long distances to play, but there's a lot who just say, I want to be where my parents can come and see almost every game.
Well, I think if you have a really solid, the difference between, the pull from if you're in Ohio and a football player to go to Ohio State versus the, shall we say, Matty, the entire lack of pull to go to Illinois. We're doing for a little bit of time, guys like Dick Butkus and so forth were, I won't say expected, but they at least were expected to give a look at Illinois. There was some tradition of, Lou Boudreau and those guys came out of Thorn Ridge and Al went to Illinois. They were the Whiz Kids. There was some tradition of really good players staying in state, Jim Grabowski, people like that. But nothing like Ohio. I mean, it's, I mean, who's the quarterback from the, Notre Dame? From, he's on TV now. Good looking kid. He didn't play much, but pro quarterback. Brady Quinn. I mean, my mother's cousin's wife taught him in school. And when he left Dublin and didn't go to Ohio State, he might as well have burned the family's house when he left. I mean, it's like almost that bad, where I don't think anybody would think that in Illinois, if you went to Wisconsin to play football or something, that anybody even gives it a second thought. But in some of these states, it's
okay. I understand.
Yeah, but I mean, if you do that in Ohio, you're like, wait a minute, Ohio State wanted you, and you went to Pittsburgh. What's wrong with you?
Yeah,
I think
Pennsylvania is a state like that. Texas is a state like that, where if you leave the state, you know, and don't choose one of the, you don't have to choose UT, but you really should not be leaving Texas.
If you go to Oklahoma, you might as well.
Yeah, I think there are some allegiances like that, but you know, it really gets down to individual choices. If you want to look at the way it once was, then you look at some of the lesser sports. Look at lacrosse recruiting, or look at, you know, even look at women's basketball recruiting. Although women have different issues, you know, fit with the team. Some of those kinds of things become a much, much bigger deal. And the transfer rate among women basketball players, especially top-rated women's basketball players, is incredibly high.
Why is that?
You think the men transfer a lot, you should see what happens on the women's side.
Just they don't get along, or the coach, or whatever.
I think it's coaching. The coach's approach. You could take Muffet McGraw, who's a Hall of Fame coach at Notre Dame and one of the best coaches in the sport. But she can be a little caustic sometimes, and some people don't react to that kind of correction when they're playing.
Well, I used to play basketball when I was young with all these Lithuanian dudes over at Revis High School. Talk about people who love basketball. I mean, they're fanatic for it. I mean, they have a Lugan Olympics every 4 years where all the Lugan players from anywhere around the world meet someplace. One year, guys from Marquette Park flew to Australia. They had a Marquette Park Lithuanian team, and they went and played against guys from Lithuania. I mean, they were good. Well, one of the kids went to his name was Valibus. He went to play in Indiana, and he didn't when Bobby Knight was there. And Bobby Knight was, he said he was so over the top. And the kid loved to play basketball. He said, I didn't mind practicing. I didn't mind doing some wind sprints. I knew that was all part of it. He goes, but Bobby Knight was just, he was nuts. He goes, we're talking about drills where everybody had their own bucket to puke in and that kind of thing. And it was, to make sure everybody got right to, he goes, I didn't need this. He goes, I didn't think I was going to be a pro. The guys that were there thinking they had their best chance of making it to the NBA, or the guys that had nothing to go home to, they stuck it out. But he goes, I couldn't wait to quit. I mean, and the thought of me quitting a basketball program, when I get up in the morning, all I care about is playing basketball. He goes, but that guy, it was not fun. It was, remember the Junction Boys? The movie came out, and when he started with how many people, Maddie, and ended up with, 14? This is when Bear Bryant was at A&M. And people were running out there every night. They were leaving, and he was calling a bunch of weenies and stuff. And the guy from he coached the Bears. He was a big star in the Rams. I don't think he's in the Hall of Fame, but he ended up coaching the Bears, made the playoffs, and he couldn't stand Halas, and he quit. What the hell was his name? He was one of the first coaches after Halas. You know what I'm talking about, Kevin. He was a linebacker, and he played.
George Allen?
No, it was after George Allen. Maybe, if you don't mind, look up Bear head coaches. It was because he came and played linebacker.
Abe Gibron.
No, he came and played linebacker.
Was it Abe?
Yeah, there was a name, Abe, from the past. He was a big friend of my buddy Billy. He's come into Orlando's all the time. He was a big buddy of the guy in there. Everybody loved Abe. He was great. But anyway, he was one of the Junction Boys. And they said, man, you're one of those guys. You must have been really tough. Guess what he said? Because I wasn't that tough. I wanted to leave, but my parents broke up and moved. I had nowhere to move back to.
Go, huh?
Yeah, no place to go.
Got no place else to go. Now we're going to a very obscure officer and a gentleman reference.
Yeah.
Jack Pardee.
You remember that?
Okay. Sure. Oh, yeah. Now, yeah.
Jack Pardee was a hell of a player and a very good coach.
75 to 77, yep. He coached the Bears.
And they made the playoffs and he quit.
He was the NFC coach of the year.
He made the playoffs and he ditched them for Washington.
Yeah. No, that was George Allen.
No. Party went to Washington.
All right, Kevin, you were you had a thought on Elizabeth Warren running. By the way, does she think her number one enemy now is the Fed too, like Trump?
I have no idea. But, you know, how do you like this, that she, you know, she runs this DNA test and finds out she has approximately the same amount of Indian heritage as you and I do, and is so lacking in self-awareness that she releases this as proof positive.
Oh, I know. It's unbelievable.
That what she's been saying all along has been true. And it's just so laughable that she has made herself a laughingstock this week.
I know. You know, one of my buddies...
The one thing I will say is, because she does have some Native American heritage, that, you know, I've always said that Trump always would blow the joke. He's, you know, calling her Pocahontas because it's supposed to be Faux-Cahontas.
Yep.
And Trump, you know, always had it wrong. But maybe now that we have this proof positive, we'll go with Pocahontas. Maybe Trump had it right all along.
Well, one of my buddies from the Fed took the... Now, I know because I have the birth certificates. A couple of the gang came from Ireland, and the other couple came from Italy. So I'd be doubt if there's any American Indian along the way there, unless they traveled over there. But one of my buddies takes the test you can take from the Mormon dudes. They own the ancestry thing, ancestry.com.
Yeah, like a 23andMe or one of those.
But you can also take one from who are the guys? The magazine National Geographic. And the one from there is they don't tell you if you're American Indian or whether you're Polish or Jew. They can trace which group you were out of Africa. The first group went up the east side of Europe and then crossed across to the top and became the Norsemen and those guys. Then there's a second. They're talking about thousands of year increments. Well, evidently everybody also has a chunk of Neanderthal in you. So the average is like 1.5%. Well, this guy came out at 2. He goes.
He came out at 2. Nice.
2%. I knew something was wrong, and I go, "Hey,
you know, I played softball in Chicago for a long time. I think there's a lot."
There's a lot more debt running around. You know, but my response was, "Hey, everybody knew those Neanderthal girls were hot." You know, I mean.
One real quick comment before we go, and that's just that the juggling act and the required deft touch for foreign policy is tested this week. Because the Saudi versus Iran versus Syria versus everything that's going on in the Middle East is really forcing the U.S. to figure out how to deal with this murder investigation.
The hot rumor I heard last night.
Touch, and I don't think it's. I think it would be difficult for anybody, but you know, it's a challenge for the Trump.
The hot rumor I heard last night, Kevin, was that the dismembering, according to the Apple Watch, started before he was dead. Now, that's just a rumor.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. And you know, I think how to challenge and deal with the Saudis in this situation, and at the same time, you know, not put give a relative advantage to Iran or Russia in that region is going to be a real, real difficult task.
Kevin, you were on the
show.
We
have the death touch of President Trump too.
You were on the show many times when they were torturing the people in the Conrad Hilton or wherever the hotel was, and I said this will not be the last time we hear from this guy doing stuff like this. Why is everybody surprised?
Yep.
Anyway, SP futures down 9, Dow futures down 100. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks, Mr. Russell Rhodes. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's JOHN@PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here.
Something happening. Hello, everyone. Back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Arley, Mr. Russell Rhodes. Professor Russell Rhodes, and he's Mr. Matt Weber.
Is he Dr. Rhodes yet?
I don't know.
I'm not sure. I am not Dr. Rhodes yet.
SP Futures down 10, Dow Futures down 101. When do you get to be Dr. Rhodes?
February.
Is there a doctor ceremony or something?
That's the time frame right now. The doctor ceremony will be like in May. But the second I walk out of there and have finished that dissertation defense, I will let you call me doctor.
Are we call Dr. J Dr. J.
You can get on the list. The list is really only ex-girlfriends and my father.
Ah.
But you can call me doctor if you want to.
The wife has no intention of calling you doctor?
Oh, God, no. They my kids barely even call me dad.
Ah.
So, you know, 12 and 14, and we're on a first name basis already.
What are you like the Rodney? Are you the Rodney Dangerfield of dads, or what?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think any father who basically has nothing but teenage girls in the house is the Rodney Dangerfield of fathers. We should start a club.
Oh, I know. It's
I love them to death, but oh my goodness. So
I can only. The little bit that I, picking Jessica up in the morning, and she's terrific. God, she's not fighting with her sister about something, and her mother gets involved, and I'm like, this isn't really going on virtually every morning, is it? And she goes, oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I just had to go downstairs and remind them what Dad's doing upstairs right now, so let's try to keep the screaming to a minimum. But maybe I shouldn't have done that so you could get a real feel for it.
I know the guy I used to play handball with 2 days a week.
And you know, the funny thing is, I think they're listening down there right now.
Oh, God. Well, my, I used to play handball with a guy.
And he would say,
I love playing. He goes, I've got two daughters and a wife, and they start fighting about who's wearing what, and the wife cannot stay out of it, so she engages. The thought that 2 days a week, I get up a half hour before all this starts and be out the door. It's like going to heaven for me to play handball. Hey, what do you make of your president says that his, with all the stuff going on and maybe dismembering somebody before he was actually dead and something, his biggest problem now, his biggest enemy is the Federal Reserve.
Well, it's just it's whoever he can target for the day. That's all. I wonder if he's trying to distract a little bit away from the Saudi Arabia thing, because I think a whole lot of people would like this thing to blow over.
Oh, sure.
You know? And, I mean, but, you know, we've already stepped up and done the right thing about it and said, look, you know, we need a little bit of an explanation here. Which, when I heard that, I wondered what his predecessor would have done.
And
I also
thing.
Wonder what Hillary would have done. I wonder if she just would have said something like that. Said this is an internal issue. It's their citizen, because he is a citizen of Saudi Arabia, even though he was living here. But I kind of ponder if anybody before Trump would have called him out on this, and they didn't really expect him to.
Oh, I think anybody would have shown the outrage. But what are you really going to do? You're not going to do anything.
Well, I mean, he showed some outrage, but he also kind of threatened them.
Yeah, but
I can't ever really remember anybody, lobbing a threat at those guys because we're so dependent on them.
I think that
for lots of things, and I think he stepped over a line nobody else has really stepped over with respect to them.
I'm going to say
that's all.
Without this is all suspicion that over the last 6 to 12 months, even though he's appears to not be the greatest at going to the security meetings and so forth. I think we have a pretty good idea of what went on in that hotel over there with the people with all the money. Who was the guy? The guy who was our fan over here, and he was in a lot of charities and everything that they kept in there.
Oh, the Brent. I can't remember what his name is.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about, Maddie. The guy who was always here and anyway, he ran the Saudi. The fund, the government fund, mm-hmm. didn't he? El Waggy, or what the hell his name was, something like that. Alawid, right?
Yeah, Prince Alawid.
Yeah, and they were all held in the hotel with all the ambulances coming right and left, and everybody's getting tortured nearly till they gave up their bank accounts and everything. And I have a feeling that Trump, who's not a total idiot, but despite what some people think, has probably been getting these security. I think we have probably a pretty good idea of how intense and how outrageous that behavior was on this guy's part. And I don't think there's any doubt that anybody in Washington knows that he's ready to become a very dangerous young dictator. I mean, very much on the lines of people we dealt with in the last century. And I think it's that bad. And now he pulls this one off. Now we're sitting there going, okay, we're beating up on Iran because they've got a bad government. They've never, well, Fari will tell you that people who disappeared to go to the prisons there never come out of. So these guys maybe are going to be almost as bad, at least as bad, worse somewhere in that mix. And now they're our guys. You know, and we're like, what a mess this is over here. Then there was a guy on CNBC the other day. He reminded me, he comes on and says, no matter what happens, this arms deal over there where we're selling these guys, the last thing you want to do is arm a guy like this, for God's sake. You know,
yeah.
And then this guy comes on and starts talking about how, you know, the small towns and wherever they build the F-35 and the F-15 need the business, and we're crazy if we dump the arms deal because Boeing needs it, and boy, the stock will go down of it. And I'm like, this guy sounds like Joe Kennedy or Lindbergh saying what a great thing Hitler was for the world, for God's sake. I mean, the thought of having one person to deal with in Europe instead of all the different countries, they didn't care what kind of a madman he was. They just wanted to do business with him. I mean, Lindbergh was one of those guys. Wasn't Joe Kennedy one of those guys? And there were all kinds of people that were pro Hitler
because you could do business with him. Yeah, because they looked from the outside and felt like there was some stability going on there, but and unfortunately talked a blind eye some of the bad things that were going on there.
I think it was a lot easier to just sell stuff to Hitler in 1933 than it was to try to sell it to the Weimar Republic 5 years before. But I don't doubt that. Who the hell would you get a check from at the Weimar Republic?
Yeah,
that didn't bounce halfway across the ocean. It's somewhat. But I think. Well, to answer your first question, and I'm just giving one man's opinion here, I think that despite who we have in office, with the different foibles, I mean, it's hard to equate Hillary and Obama with Trump. I honestly believe that when it comes to something like this, even Trump realizes what a big deal it is and sits down with people and says, okay, this guy's a problem. We can't toss Saudi Arabia tomorrow. We buy oil from them, and we're doing this and that. I think the responses are going to be very. I think they're going to be very similar. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
Deep down, I think all three of those people love America, and when the chips are down, they're going to behave the same way. I honestly do. I hope so. I would hope.
Yeah.
I mean, the
problem is we just beyond the oil, we need those guys to kind of act as a balance over in the Middle East as well. You know, they're our guy over there against Russia's guy who is Iran, and you know it's just unfortunately, you know, we're so dependent on them. I think we're just going to have to figure out a way to let this thing go one way or another.
Well, but
either accept their he slipped and hit his head on the corner of the sink and died. And then we want to, and his last words were, dismember me.
Yeah. Don't forget.
Something that unbelievable.
Don't forget, Iran used to be our guy. And we're probably in a...
I know, that's the funny thing. That's why I love talking to Fari.
Yeah.
I love when you, I'm a sucker for some of the clickbait where it's like, pictures of Tehran in the 1960s, and it's a bunch of people looking like they're on Mad Men.
Yeah,
you know, it's really funny how they've kind of gone in the opposite direction since they had their revolution. But yeah, he was our guy, and we had to basically, we basically got him out of there.
The Ayatollah put one over on Jimmy Carter. Don't worry, I'll be fine when I get over there. And then he wasn't.
Oh yeah, Carter was one of the first people to recognize them.
Yeah,
we were one of the first countries to recognize that government, and that got us very far.
Yeah, that was we did the same mistake. Here was a Democrat. Yeah. They kind of didn't know what he was doing, and then now the Bushies when they went into Iraq, who was the maybe I keep forgetting this guy's name. Who was the knucklehead who was getting paid as a consultant by Rumsfeld and basically was steering our Iraqi policy and how we were going to
cover... Rove?
No, it was a guy from Iraq. And,
I have no idea.
The idea was...
I don't know why you would think I would know that.
Because we talked about it. I thought I asked you to look it up once and you did. But anyway, we were going to parachute him in, or with a helicopter, not a parachute. And he would all of a sudden, the Iraqis would rally around him, and he was going to be the next president.
Kind of like what we did with the guy in Afghanistan?
Yeah, same sort of thing.
Yeah.
Well, he got over there, and they immediately...
Did he make his own cool costumes, too?
They got there, and he barely got out of there because they wanted to try him for murder. Because of something he did before he left. And somehow Rumsfeld... Yeah, and then all of a sudden, this guy was totally useless after we paid him. And he basically talked us into to invade the place, and now what? Was that a good idea or not? I'm thinking no.
No, it has not. If anything, it has not turned out particularly well.
No, so I mean,
it's going in the opposite. That's the place that's going in the opposite direction too.
So now Saudi with this guy, he's a problem.
Yeah,
I mean
he is a problem. The hopeful solution is, you know, he's not in charge yet. A lot of people forget that. I mean, he's in charge in waiting. But he's not in charge yet.
He's not
the only one that has been, okay, you're next. They keep rotating people into that spot, and I wonder if maybe he overstepped a boundary here and if we may end up with a different guy in charge.
I think that from Fari, And from what I read, he is anybody who's on his level that could possibly take over for him is pretty much toast. Either they've been tortured out of existence or whatever. And
he made sure that there was nobody else in line.
Well, and the guy who's still a
king. He got to be first in line for the concert ticket, and then he told everybody else that it was sold out. So
pretty much,
he's the only one remaining now.
Well, the king could take control back, but the king, according to
Fari, that's what I mean when there's still somebody.
I think he's got probably according to Fari, he's pretty far advanced with the elves. I don't think he knows what his name is, from what Fari says.
Okay,
I don't think he's capable of doing anything right now. So. I mean, this is all sort of hearsay, but I don't know if anybody who knows more about between Lou and Fari. I think we got a pretty good.
Fari's the go-to guy on this stuff.
Yeah, I would say
as long as he's not taking direction from his Chihuahua.
Yeah,
he's good to go.
All right, so we had market looked horrible, selling off, interest rates going up, mortgage stuff, housing market looks like it's basically run up against a wall. And then all of a sudden yesterday we have this incredible rip your face off bounce back rally. Is that just what it is? A one day event? I mean, I never saw so many people get out of the way to the upside. There wasn't a seller anywhere.
No, it generally takes the elevator down and then takes a little while for us to get back up, but now it's taking the elevator up too.
Yeah, well, Frank is convinced.
That's usually what happens when we're close to a market top.
Yeah, that's what Frank was saying.
Both directions.
Yeah, the swings are coming back and forth so much that it's something you got to be very careful with. But obviously, you feel better yesterday with your stocks than you did today. I mean, today the ones that are moving, you've got IBM is down 660, and I did not do that spread, which I wanted to do, and I didn't do because I'm thinking I was going to pay too much for it. And we've got Netflix is up 35. It was up as much as 65 last night, something like that. Now it's up 35. Still a big move to the upside. We got Amazon up 15. Other movers in the Dow. Boeing's up $1.75, but the rest of them are all pretty much down. Home Depot down 3. IBM down 660. So those all take a chunk out of the Dow. Yesterday, do you think, and all this stuff that just from a trading standpoint, but I'm not a big believer in what the man says, but let's just say this. If I would have faded everything the president said since he started running for office, God, would I be rich? Would I be rich or what? He was going to spank Boeing. It's like tripled.
I think we figured that one out pretty early on.
Yeah. I still can't bring myself to. I mean, the day that the insurance companies and healthcare people had yesterday with United Healthcare up, wasn't he going to tear out the middleman? He was going to. Insurance companies are charging too much. Prescription drugs. He's going to do this, that, and the other thing. They've got no. So yesterday he says you should put the list price in the commercials, which actually makes some sense. Now they come out. It's their First Amendment right to screw you. where does it say that?
By not telling you the price is.
Yeah, but not telling you what the list price is versus the other price versus whatever. Anybody? I've had adult beverages with a couple people from the pharmacy community. One of which has been on the show a couple times. I'm going to say, Russell, with the possible exception of bootlegging during the Depression, I've never seen or heard of anything as dirty as that business, ever.
As the way they jack the prices around?
Well, who gets kickbacks, who doesn't? The prices, the list prices are probably the thing I could deal with like that. When I was in college, how many back years ago was that? My stepfather worked for Waltham Watch and Hallmark Rings. I imagine Hallmark Rings are still around. They made, wedding rings and whatever. So if anybody, there weren't that many guys and girls that got married at Notre Dame, but a few did. Then I had a ring catalog, and I would get them the wholesale price, which they come in and pick it out, and which was way less than they could get from a jeweler. And I still got 10% of a kickback from the wholesale price. But the rings were, $500 back in those days for half a carat, and I'd get $50, which is, I sold maybe 10 of them. So, I mean, it was, $50 in college is a lot of beers at a buck a pitcher. I think a meatball sandwich is 59 cents in one of those saloons we used to go. But, I mean, the list price on these things would be like $3,000. you know, and the wholesale price was like $550. It's like, you know, I mean, and everybody's amazing. Got their finger in the whole pie the whole way. And, you know, I mean, it's how many times can you buy it? Well, let me say, how many times can you buy an engagement ring? Some guys seem to make a habit of it. You buy the ring and you go to some other guy, you pay $5,000 for the thing, and the next guy says it appraises out at $10,000. Well, how the hell can it? I just paid $5,000. How can it be worth $10,000? I mean, it wasn't like I strangled the guy. But what I'm saying is that I know of kickbacks. That's why these pharmacy benefit managers even exist. Because they get kickbacks between the drug companies and the pharmacy. The pharmacies don't get the best rate. They give these guys the best rate to bring the customer to the pharmacy. They give them in the middle. So if you have the Chicago Teachers Union, if you're their pharmacy benefit manager, and you force all those guys to go to, say, CVS instead of Walgreens, you're going to get a kickback from everybody who trades with CVS. With CVS, if you and I and Maddie open up a drugstore and we go to Merck and we say we want your best price for, I was going to say Viagra, but now that's generic, so that's not one of them. For one of these high priced drugs, like, actually Lipitor is generic now too, right? Or is it? Anyway, let's just say Lipitor is not.
I haven't reached the point on that one yet.
The Lipitor or the Viagra?
neither.
Okay, well then, good for you.
And after the way that I talked about the women in my household earlier, I'll never need for Viagra again.
Would you say a jar of 100 pills is going to last you a while?
A lifetime.
Yes. Anyway,
I got no respect. A lifetime supply of Viagra is 3 pills.
That's right. Oh. Okay. That's right. And the first two are for test runs, right? I mean, I think that if you say there's a, well, what's with the new blood thinners are $300 a month. Nobody mm-hmm. takes Coumadin anymore. They take these new ones, Eliquis and the other one. They're always all over TV. I think they're $350 a month. So it's $10. Yeah. It's $10 a pill. So I'm going to say if a pharmacy benefit manager gets in the middle, I bet they get a kickback at $2 a pill. Where if you and I went to Merck or whoever makes the damn thing, we're not going to get that price. We're just going to get the wholesale price to us. But if somebody brings somebody to us, magically there's money in it for them as well, even though we don't get that price. So, because you wonder why the drugstore would care who brings somebody to them, because there's an extra price in there. Which is, I mean, I think for anybody who wanted to become president and really attack the problem, I think you could probably not do anything else for 2 or 3 months. Just have people educate you on that whole system.
On that area, yeah.
On that whole area. And before you'd even come up with a solution. And that's what, no matter who it is in that Oval Office, I think even though I give, you know, Trump no end of grief for his big mouth, and because he doesn't do enough of this as I think he should, my suspicions are, you could probably, in every one of these issues, you could spend days studying it, and only to have somebody do something. The last thing the man needs, with all the stuff going on in the world, is this idiot in Saudi Arabia to torture, kill a newspaper guy and dismember him when the guy's from the U.S. It's the last thing he needed waking up to last week, right? I mean,
I actually do think there's some method to the madness that goes on, and they try to control the narrative. And this one was out. I severely doubt that this was part of the narrative that they were trying to work up to, leading up to the election.
Well, I wouldn't be a bit surprised. I mean, I also think when I saw the market move like it did yesterday, somehow behind the scenes there was going to be some, deal with China or something in the next week or two, because I still think he might pull that one out of his hat. But tell you what, look at these Japanese and Chinese markets. They look like crapo. I mean, how many year lows are they in? I mean, it's
no that and I'm surprised it hasn't bled over more. I really am. But yeah, I think we're probably trying to take advantage of them when they're in a weak spot economically. You know.
Yeah. Well, I think so too.
I think, and then the rhetoric has not helped their situation at all.
My fear with one of my fears with the current administration is the more I learn by doing the show and so forth, and by listening to people like you and Carl and Hal that are, you know, essentially professional economists and they know a lot of stuff, the more this is a much bigger, there's a much bigger picture here than the average Joe can understand, and even the slightly above average economic Joe like me. The whole idea that of putting together a trade agreement at the same time you're fighting with somebody else and fighting militarily with somebody else and trying to put deals together, this all fits together, and I get this weird feeling that somehow coming out of Washington that these guys don't have the respect for if we beat the hell out of China enough, and I don't really like these guys, if we drive them to the point where they're really hurting, we're going to be hurting too. I mean, I don't think they understand how this all works together as much as maybe I'm starting to, is my concern. I mean, I don't know, do you think I'm being crazy on that or no?
No, not at all. Not in the least.
Because I don't know if anybody, even the fact that some people seem amazingly clueless that as these interest rates go up, even people I know in the real estate business, I said, you got to understand it. It's not what you can afford your house for. It's what the next person can afford it for.
Right.
Given the fact.
The greater pool. How much are they going to be able to pay for it or willing to pay for it?
Well, plus everybody, I think. I mean, even starting to happen in Chicago now. Everybody in these state and local governments have used the low interest rate to weasel in for higher taxes. And now all of a sudden, they're at a point where if you start putting a higher interest rate on top of the higher taxes, these house prices have got to give. They just have to. I don't see how they don't. I mean, I hope they don't. because I know a lot of people trying to sell their house, but I mean, I don't see how they don't. I mean, S&P futures down 11. We can have a couple more earnings when we come back. S&P futures down 12, down on 139. NASDAQ down 40, still nowhere near as much as we were up yesterday. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holly, Mr. Russell Rhodes, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures down 13, Dow futures down 153, NASDAQ futures down 43. Still not, you know, much of a shot into how much we were up yesterday, but it's sort of getting there. I mean, so it seems like it's getting worse. Oil down 39 cents. 10-year yield unchanged at 3.15. So that went up to 3.24 and came back down, but it's seems like it's really settling in right where it is. DAX is now down 58.5%. It was up earlier. FTSE up 12.18. CAC ran down 13.3, so not getting any help out of Europe. Nikkei up 1.3%, 291. It was down a bunch yesterday. Shanghai up 15.6%. Hang Seng up 17. Let's call that one flat. So not a huge bounce back over there either after our big move here yesterday. West Texas down 39 cents. Brent down 35. Brent still over 81, 81.06. Natural gas 3.26, up another 3 cents. RBOB gas 1.98 like it has been. And we've got gold down $1.90 and silver down a whole penny. Copper unchanged. Maddie, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
34 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have a significant crash now in the northwestern suburbs. Jane Addams Tollway I-90 eastbound just before Roselle Road. There's a crash blocking the three left lanes, causing all kinds of congestion. So keep that in mind if you're heading inbound on I-90. Out to the northwest. No issues on the Kennedy or Edens itself. Normal traffic volumes for this time of morning. Same with the Eisenhower and Stevenson. Southside expressways are looking good. Off the expressways, we have a crash Quinton Road at Route 22 in the northern burbs. Just west of there, still working on that issue at Algonquin Road, which is Route 62 at Sam Bloom Road. There's a crash with some lane blockage there. Southwestern suburbs, US 30 at Heggs Road. There is a crash causing delays. Other than that, no major issues of concern on the tollways, roadways, or highways. In the city, as we mentioned earlier, Ashland Avenue southbound between 61st and 63rd, the right lane is blocked because of a crash. It was a major crash involving a car that hit a light pole, and this caused the wires to fall across the road. No injuries there, but ComEd is working to fix the down lines, and that's going to take the majority of the day. So avoid Ashland and 61st down on the south side. Everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, mostly sunny, cold, a high of just 49, high winds as well. Right now it's partly cloudy and 45 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 78 today. Right now it's clear and 58. In sports, both the NLCS and ALCS series were in action last night. It was the Red Sox pulling away from the Astros late. They blew out Houston 8-2 with a late grand slam to seal that one. Sox lead the Astros 2-1 in that best of seven. National League side, it's now tied at 2-2. LA outlasted the Brewers 2-1 in 13 innings to even up that series. Lastly, in hockey, Blackhawks were off, but the Coyotes were in action. They lost to the Minnesota Wild 2-1. Chief.
The market, like I said, the market looks a little bit weaker this morning. Individual stocks in the Dow, you have a couple of movers. You got Boeing down 1.25. IBM's a big one, down 7.42. So even if I would have thought at 145 that 140 was the right strike, Russell, I'd be $2. I'd be $2 under that strike, for God's sake. And we've got United. Yeah, United Health is down $1.50, but they were up over $10 yesterday. And as the medical area. Is still, that's where all our money's going, I think, Russell. I mean, Carl was on last week talking about when history is written of this last 10, 15, 20 years, you're going to find that the part that nobody talks about in the CPI and anywhere has been the thing that essentially has gagged the country. It's the medical stuff. And we're ignoring it, but it's taken its toll. It's like it's like a blood sucker to the economy, and we don't seem to be able to deal with it, and we just can't. You know, so I don't know. I mean, it's unfortunate, but tell you what, talk about. I mean, if you would have thought ever that doctors would be nowhere near the top of the food chain when it comes to the money and they'd make 1/100th of an executive at an insurance company, you would never. I don't think you ever would have thought that 20 years ago, would you?
No, not 20 years ago. The balance of power has changed one way or another. I guess maybe I would just assume that the big insurance companies have better lobbyists than the doctors.
I think you're probably right.
They're able to.
It's funny, when I was in grad school, the two things that Milton Friedman talked about most was essentially the monopoly that the doctors had. And he would define the monopoly as, well, it wasn't really a monopoly, but it was American Medical Association, which is essentially doctors, right, controlled the amount of essentially medical schools. So they controlled mm-hmm. The amount of doctors. So back in a simpler time, which it was, he would just be constantly ragging on the fact that if he had a few more medical schools, they would fill up, and you'd have 5 or 10% more doctors. Instead of the doctors making, $200,000 a year, and if there being a shortage of them, they'd all be making $175,000 a year, and there wouldn't be a shortage of them, and how much better off the country would be. Little did he realize what a simple problem he was dealing with back in 1977 or 76, and now, where would you even put that one up on the blackboard? I mean, it's who even cares?
It probably wouldn't even make it on the board.
No, it wouldn't even make it on the board. Now it's,
You never hear the labor cost as the problem with I'm using sensational term here, skyrocketing healthcare costs. That's not where it is.
No,
it's and all the different companies that do make profits off of that, including the insurance companies.
Well, sure.
The drug companies. I actually defend them a little bit when I talk about them in my classes, because it's very costly to come up with something new, and if they're batting 5%, not 500, 5% on getting things through the whole approval process, they do need some revenues to cover the other 95%. So I'm not disagreeing that things are out of control, overpriced, but I do think they need to tag a little bit on there for the research and development.
I'll ask you a question regarding that. If you and I became the two-headed monster in the Oval Office, and if somehow we were able to cut the process to get a drug approved without making it too much more unsafe, if we were to cut that in half in terms of money, who's going to be the biggest bitchers?
If we cut that in half?
Yeah, if all of a sudden we make it a lot smoother, instead of $100 million, it's now $50, who do you think is going to bitch the most?
I assume the drug companies.
The big drug companies. They want to be the only people that can get it through. So if
want it to be an expensive process.
Yes, because if Manny Weber has a small drug company, they're going to say, either sell out to us, or because you don't have $100 million to bring it through. If Manny was able to say, it's only 25 now, we got plenty, that's not the answer they want.
No, that makes sense. I had not considered that angle, but that makes an awful lot of sense.
Then how efficient do you think it is? It's like the electric company. Okay, if you say, here's the cost of electricity, and you have 5,000 people there being three times overpaid, I'm exaggerating some, that's a cost in their mind, right? Now, when you're in my mind, it might be an efficiency, and why should I pay for that? I mean, how efficient are they? Why is it that an unusual percentage of new drugs come from the small firms that actually are spending a lot less than the big firms?
because they get hung up. Or they have to, everything has to go perfectly, and they have to be able to raise money as they go through the process. That's the big thing, and they only get one shot at a good drug. They have to bat 1,000 to get these things through.
Well, I've been involved.
Or, you know, maybe they get two shots, you know.
Well, I've been involved in a couple places. One, I'll tell a story one of these days, has to do with a contributor to the show's dad, who was a serious surgeon. And some drug that as soon as a big company got involved where they had a competing drug, he ended up in all kinds of legal problems. No, you can't tell me there was no connection there. And I did some work for some guy, and we never were able to raise cash. Although he did at one point before me, and didn't work out so hot, so I never really got involved. But it was a when you go in, if they think you've had a heart attack, or might be, if you're heart has damage, and I'm not a doctor, but if your heart has had any damage due to a heart attack, basically by being deprived of oxygen, there's an enzyme it gives off. And so to figure out if somebody had a heart attack, the first thing you do is take blood and you check and see if this enzyme is present. If so, how much of it's there? And the more enzymes there, the more the extent of the heart attack and the more your heart was deprived of oxygen or whatever, again, not being a doctor, for a while. And it takes about, I'm going to say, 2-3 hours, maybe hour and a half to get the to test back. Well, this guy had invented something. It was about the size of a cell phone, a smartphone, not my flip phone. And you could essentially put somebody's finger in there, take the blood sample, and you got to read it.
Oh, yeah.
You got to read
it. I know exactly. I met with these people when they were trying to get the approval.
They brought the device
through. It was really cool.
I know, but I'm going to say they never got anywhere, and they ended up selling part of it out to one of the big guys, and they never, the big guy's salesman was selling theirs and his, and I don't think they ever got approved, and I don't think they ever, there was always another test, there was always something. So finally, one of the big companies.
They needed, and it was really a simple device.
Yeah.
Kind of cool. It was like something from the future, where you just push a little button and a little laser thing came out and took the reading that you needed, and you were done.
Well, they would say you needed a hospital test for 6 months, where you had to give this one plus the other one. These are the big guys that have the other one in there. And all of a sudden, well, they didn't have enough money for that. Well, what hospital is going to do it? Then one hospital is going to do it? Then they weren't going to do it. And finally, you're 3-4 years down the road, and you're nowhere. I mean, the whole process is just designed to keep anybody, it's almost like the story that I never really believed, that there was a guy that had a carburetor. If anybody remembers what a carburetor was, they'd get 100 miles in a gallon, and General Motors would never, oil companies never let the guy produce it, that type of thing, which I think was all BS, but... But simple.
Well, if they did that, they definitely colluded with the oil company.
Well, sure. I mean, one of the most amazing stories of big companies screwing people. Matty Weber will not know the answer to this, but you might. What city in the country had the best, by far, the best streetcar system? I'm going to say in the world, and don't have one left.
Well, a lot of them.
I do know the answer.
I don't know which city it is, but I know what the story is.
Manny does know the answer. Well, who would it be, Manny?
I think it's Los Angeles.
I think you are correct. Did you hear that from me?
I think I've heard it probably 30 times from you.
Okay. Well, because General Motors went out and did a massive study. They paid somebody to do it and said how efficient, inefficient streetcars were and how they should all go to buses. And Los Angeles tore up the... Now, the difference is, in Chicago, the system...
My understanding is... GM gave them some cash to rip up the track.
Yeah. I mean, so this isn't new necessarily. But now the difference there is they were segregated. I mean, in Chicago, the streetcars just ran down the street. So if there was a traffic, if there was a traffic tie up, the streetcar was no better than the car.
Why didn't LA have a subway and or L track system similar to San Francisco or Chicago? Or
I don't know. Well, they had the streetcar system.
Yeah, I know, but streetcars are less efficient, although there's, you said, were segmented.
Why would they
it's just a big city like that. I mean, why wouldn't you? It's a million times more efficient than a bus system, as we know.
Imagine if Ashland Avenue, where you lived, which is a pretty wide street, imagine in the middle if there were two streetcar tracks that no cars couldn't go into. So no matter how many cars got jammed up, the streetcars could still go. That's what I mean by a segregated system.
Right. I get that. And I get, but my question is, in the beginning, I just don't know why San Francisco has a subway system along with streetcars and everything else, and yet L.A. does not seem to have that.
It's the way the subway system in San Francisco is relatively recent.
Is it?
When I say relatively, I think it was, you know what?
I'll look it up.
I'm going to say the BART was built in the late 50s, early 60s.
I mean, you might be right on that, but it's a good system. I mean, it's similar to Boston and other, you know, cities of that ilk.
Yeah, but it's way later. The Boston system, I bet, was 1900. Now, your New York system, all that was in Chicago as well. Your it was all above ground, and then it was put in the subways.
LA's was above ground for the long time, and that's what we just talked about being torn up.
Yeah.
By the way, do you two gentlemen have a guess on the exact year that BARTA was built?
The BART I'm going to say it opened 1962.
Russell?
I'm going to say 67.
1973.
Wow. I know it was
really is new.
Because Pullman had just, they didn't build the cars. They were built by, who the hell built them? They didn't build those cars originally. Because I remember those guys talking about it. I know it was right before that I went to work for Pullman. I thought it was like 10 years. You're talking about it was like 5. Wow. So that's the whole system, Matty, or just because there's a part that goes under the bay.
I mean, now that I'm reading more into this, that must have been when the last bit of it was finalized, because it looks like it was envisioned in the 40s and 50s. Construction began in the 60s. So when you read more into it, it doesn't really give you the exact year.
Is my mind going, or is that system that goes across the bay, is that just a tunnel that's laid on the bottom of the bay and it's not dug under? I think it is.
I think you might be right.
It's not dug under the bay. I think it just laid on the ground.
When you take the subway in New York and go across the, you obviously go under the river.
Right.
I mean, how far below ground is that?
Pretty far.
I mean, you're way under.
It's below.
Yeah.
That one's actually dug.
You know how they did
that? My understanding is you do not want to actually see what the tunnel looks like, because it's old and dripping and... That's something that they're trying to get fixed and rebuilt before they have some sort of a disaster.
Well, the Holland Tunnel, which is the auto tunnel, I think the stuff I look at. Get a load of this. This thing was not rock. It was all mud. So the way they dug it was they put the first huge chunk in, I think if it's concrete or steel, and then the next piece they just put there, and then they had these massive jacks. And they shoved the tunnel piece through the mud, and they'd move it like 10 feet, and all that mud would drop in the bottom, and they'd scoop it out, and then they'd build a tunnel another 10 feet. Then they shoved this piece out another 10 feet, and they basically burrowed their way across through the mud, mm-hmm. which is totally different when they went around the sides on Hoover Dam. That was total rock, so every few feet. You had to put like 30 sticks of dynamite and blow out like a foot and a half, and then you clean up all the rack, and then you drill and do it again. So every one of these tunnels and all these places is totally different based on what you had to go through. They're all not the same. I mean, you can use dynamite all you wanted in mud, man, and you're not getting too far, right?
Right. By the way, I have better information now on the BART, reading the article through. The construction began in 1964. The final ceremonial spike for the original system was placed in 1971. The very first service began in September 1972, and then the Market Street Subway opened, which I think was the first thing I read, in 1973.
Okay, because it took them a long time to go underneath the bay or whatever they did to get across.
I can only imagine.
Right, yeah. So it was an eight, nine-year process with the very first service beginning in late 1972. Which I would have guessed it would have been 20 years earlier than that. So that's still...
Aren't you kind of surprised, both you guys, that if you look at New York, there's... When you came back and forth from Brooklyn, did you get on the subway that actually goes on the bridge, the one bridge that has the subway and the cars on it?
I did both. So I did under the river.
Yeah,
and then I've also done on the bridge.
That must be neat.
Yeah, it is. The view is spectacular. Cool. It's beautiful at night. It really is.
But aren't you kind of surprised that in San Francisco, that they didn't put some sort of a train piece to the Bay Bridge. I mean, it's two levels now for cars that you wouldn't, they wouldn't have had a third level for trains.
What year was the Bay Bridge built?
Back in the 30s. It was built like the same time as the Golden Gate.
Yeah. Okay. So they were both built around the same time. Yeah. Okay.
I'm going to say we opened within a year of each other. But the Golden Gate, because of the size of the span, you know, is the sexy one. Because the Bay Bridge is just kind of a clunky bridge. They have one or two spans, but the spans are nowhere near as big. The spans at the Golden Gate at the time was by far the biggest suspension bridge anywhere.
So I assume you cannot take a train from the city to, like, Oakland or...
Oakland, sure.
Oh, you can.
Okay, but can. Not to, like, Sausalito or something?
No,
like
not
that.
To Sausalito, no.
Okay.
You take either a bridge or a ferry.
Yeah.
I mean, because that's why if you take a train north from San Francisco, you got to get out in Oakland. Otherwise...
Right.
You've got... It's kind of awkward. It gets you there, but it does, but it's not a direct line or a direct. I've had to take the train around Northern California before to do some things for SIBO, and it's like you're not drawing a straight line from one place to another because of where they put the railroad tracks.
Yeah, you got to go around
and
the bottom part of the bay.
The train is basically on the other side. That probably is why Oakland exists, because it's on the other side of the bay.
Yeah, pretty much. And
yeah.
But so what do you make? You and Frank have the same, back to the market here, Russell. You and Frank have the same sort of view that once it starts to get this whippy up and down, that's uh-huh. that's what precedes down markets. But we've been down for a while. I'm not so sure we won't come back halfway and sit a while. I mean, I don't know that means we should go flying down today. Plus, I got a few puts, which means it probably won't go flying down today. But I don't know that. My instinct tells me, for the fact that the 10-year is up to 3.2 here, I think we're probably okay for a while, and unless it goes lower. I mean, barring some... I think the correction we've had might be... Again, this is just one guy's opinion that could change.
You think it's an adjustment to the reality that we're probably going to stay above 3%?
Yeah, but I don't think it's priced for 4 or 3.5 or 3.75.
No, I don't think we're really priced in for. I don't think the equity market believes two more hikes in 2019. How's that? I think the bond market might be anticipating it, but I don't think the stock market's prepared for it. I think the equity investors believe that the end of the hiking cycle is upon us, but. I personally don't think it is, because you keep hearing the Fed guys refer to returning to like normal levels first. They don't even look at it like we've really hiked yet. They're just looking at it like we've reached the equilibrium of where we should be if we hadn't had some sort of crisis a decade ago.
Well, they also haven't really started draining the money supply, so I don't think that they're...
Yeah, and that's another gonna be a tough one to
By
do
the way,
the
did you... Did you happen to watch CNBC Friday, real briefly, and see my the fact that I was vindicated?
You were? Who talked about you?
No, but you know, I tell a story.
Oh,
from
you were vindicated.
Yes, my memory was vindicated. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
About back in the early 70s, how the Fed denied on the inflation, until finally one day Arthur Burns said, "It looks like we got inflation," and I had heard that on the radio years ago. And I couldn't remember who the hell the guy was. Well, there was a guy on Friday named Stephen Roach. Now, he wasn't the guy, but he was an aide, evidently, in the
Yeah, and he was a big deal at Morgan Stanley for a long time as well.
And he said and he said verbatim what I've been trying to remember. He goes, "Yeah, we he said at one point they had 80% of the basket out of the calculation." I didn't know that. I mean, I did not remember that. He said we took out oil because that was the Arabs. Then we took out food because you got to deliver so much food that it was only the oil in the delivery process. Then we took out, like, plastics because that was made from oil. Because at one point we had 80% of the basket we weren't paying attention to. We thought it was strictly oil-related until finally one day Burns walked in and said, "We can't deny it anymore, guys. We got inflation." I couldn't believe I heard that. Because this guy's got to be, what is he, 75, 80, this guy Roach. He's up there.
Yeah. He's been around for a while.
He was
one of the senior guys at Morgan Stanley, and he started pointing out that we were getting ready to get into a lot of trouble. just before 2008, and I think he got pushed out because people got tired of hearing the negativity out of him.
Yeah, I think so too.
Although there's negativity and there's reality, and I think they didn't like the reality that he was telling.
Well, he was saying that the Fed now is seeing inflation perking up here, and they're not going to stop just because Trump, because they don't want to get back into the
Trump.
Well, just because, you know, the market may go down a little bit, which it will, hopefully just a little bit. And, you can't, the last thing you want, because I remember that era when they had half a point, I think there was a couple of 1 point raises, weren't there?
I mean, Yeah, we've had three, I know we've had three quarters, but if you go far enough back, yeah, we've had, it's one of the reasons we still talk about option row because we actually did have a 1% change in interest rates. Hopefully, we never reach that point again.
God, I hope not. We don't. That was so miserable for everybody. Russell, thank you very much, buddy. Hopefully,
you betcha.
Next week in studio, you can drink your iced coffee. SP futures down 12, down 140. Be back tomorrow, Stacks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
No either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.